grateful and honored and joyful to be with all of you this evening. I thank you very much for taking the time to be present tonight. On my way driving here, we were going by a body of water, and there were so many lights and flashing colors, and I asked, what is all this? And our Shubha Vilas ji, he told me, this is a very popular feature of Goa. And I said, can you explain it? He said, you don't want me to explain it. I said, well, that's all the more reason to explain it. The Isha Upanishad tells that in order to achieve enlightenment, we must cultivate an understanding of both knowledge and ignorance simultaneously. So swamis are supposed to be like that. So he said, these are boats that float in the water, and all night people drink and gamble. And this is a very special feature of Goa. I said, I thought beaches were the special feature of Goa. But anyways, Goa is internationally famous for people who are coming to explore various ways of enjoying. It's very nice weather, beautiful beaches, forests, and all these other features. And then I was thinking, here I am looking at this river with these boats, and tomorrow I will be at the Kumbh Mela, where I'll be seeing three rivers, the Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati, meeting together at Triveni Sangam. And such a variety within this great land of India. And some are people who are coming to the rivers for one thing, and others are coming for another. But one thing we all have in common, the Brahma Sutra tells, anandamayo byashat, that the absolute truth, the supreme being, or God, Bhagavan, Parabrahman, the nature is full of pleasure. And therefore, mamayvam so jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana manashashtanindriyani prakriti stani karishati. The Bhagavad Gita tells, we are all a part of that Parabrahman. Therefore, we are Brahman. The living force within the heart of every living being is Atma. And Bhagavan is Param Atma. The analogy is given of the sun planet and the sun rays. Qualitatively, the sun ray has identical characteristics as the sun planet. It's emanating light and heat. But there's also a difference, achintya bheda abheda tattva. The difference is the sun ray is never the source of the sun. The sun is always the source of the sun ray. And the sun supports limitless sun rays. The Shaktiman, the energy and the energetic source. So because Bhagavan is Satchit Ananda, every living being, wherever there's life, wherever there's consciousness, wherever there's awareness, there's the presence of the jiva, the soul. And that soul's nature is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge. And what's the use of being internal and full of knowledge unless there's Ananda, happiness? Does anyone want to live in eternally in unhappiness? The culmination of Satchit is Ananda, ever-increasing, ever-expanding pleasure. That's who we are. And therefore, everyone is looking for pleasure. It's something we all have in common. Whatever our sex or nationality or religion or no religion, whatever our species, the birds are looking for pleasure. The insects are looking for pleasure. The problem is some birds take pleasure in eating insects. Jiva jiva sujivanam. But everyone's looking for pleasure. Some are looking for it in Goa, and some at the Kumbh Mela. But everyone's looking for pleasure. But I discovered here at Goa, there's such wonderful, wonderful spiritually minded people. And actually, we're Tatra Tishtami Narada Yatra Gayanti Mad Bhakta. Krishna tells Narada Muni, wherever sincere souls are coming together to hear and chant and remember and render seva to the Supreme Being, I am there. So actually, we're having our own little Kumbh Mela right here tonight. But I'm remembering at this moment the very first time I ever visited Prayag, the modern-day Allahabad, where the Ganga, Yamuna, and Saraswati meet. May I share that story? There was when I first came to India, I was living in Himalayas. This was December of 1971. And I was living in a cave in the forest, not far from Rishikesh. And I was meeting sadhus. And so many sadhus were leaving Rishikesh, leaving the Himalayas to go on a pilgrimage. And I was just a teenager, actually. I was just 19, turning 20, wondering, I've come all the way from Chicago on a pilgrimage to the Himalayas. And I've come here to meet all the holy people. And now all these holy people are going on a pilgrimage somewhere else. So I asked, where are you all going? They said, come with us. We're going to Kumbh Mela. It was the Ard Kumbh Mela. I said, really? It sounds interesting. They said, come, come. I said, tell me about it. They said, there will be 20 million people there bathing at the same time. I said, please, you go. And I really like my lonely cave. When you come back, you could tell me all about it. So I stayed. And it was the Himalayas are usually always lonely, but even when all the sadhus go, it's very, very lonely. But it was happy days. But later on, that was in 1970. In 1971, in the summer, I went to Prayag because I was so eager. Since that time, I was reading so many Vedic scriptures. And in the Ramayana, I read how Lord Ramchandra declared Prayagraj, that this is the king of all holy places. So the more I read and the more I heard from sadhus, the more I was very eager to go there. So in those days, traveling for sadhus was very simple. You just jumped on a third-class train. Now I don't know if they have such trains. This is before they had bars in the windows. But they were so crowded, packed with human people, that no ticket collector could get in. If it wasn't completely packed, then sadhus wouldn't go in it, because then somebody would ask for a ticket. But when they were really packed, that very nice. It's kind of like a little Kumbh Mela. So I got to Prayag by third-class trains and walked for many, many miles in very, very hot sand, and I had no shoes. And finally I came to the Sangam, where the three rivers are meeting. When we have anticipation by hearing about something, it gives us such an experience. Now, in America, there's a city called Pittsburgh. And there happens to be three rivers that all meet there. In fact, there's a stadium called the Three Rivers Stadium. I think it's the Ohio, the Allegheny, and the Monongahela rivers. And they're all meeting together. And you look at it and you think, it's nice. It's very beautiful. But after reading Ramayana and reading Srimad Bhagavat and reading so many wonderful and hearing from so many sadhus about the holiness of this place, while I was walking in the red hot sand, my heart was yearning to arrive at this site where the Ganga, Yamuna, and Saraswati are meeting, where millions and millions of people come on pilgrimage, where Ramchandra has personally declared the king of holy places, where Shankaracharya and Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya and Nimbarkacharya and Ballabhacharya, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa Goswami, such a history here. I'm going to be there. My guru, Srila Prabhupada, he once said that we should see through our ears. Because what we see with our eyes is just an external appearance. But when we hear about something, then when we see it, we have a whole different experience. So here I was, just a very young, penniless pilgrim, feeling the greatest wealth in my whole life is I am going to bathe in these rivers. And even though the sun was burning on that sand and my feet were scorched, I walked for several miles, and I was walking along the banks of the Ganga, Mother Ganga, walking, 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 and suddenly, before my eyes, I saw beautiful Mother Yamuna flowing down and embracing Ganga Mata. It was a totally intoxicating experience. Because it was summer and it was noon, there was absolutely not a single human being anywhere around. So I was sitting on the riverbank, and I wanted to prepare myself through meditation and contemplation and chanting mantras before going in the river. Because Bhagavad Gita tells, yeyatam mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyam. Mama vartmanu vartante manusya paratha sarvasha. As we approach the Lord, or a holy place, or a holy person, or the holy scriptures, the shastras, then the Lord reciprocates accordingly. Lolyam. When we have a deep eagerness, sharanagati, to surrender, then our hearts are completely open to receive. It is said that bhakti or prema is like a seed. The heart is like a field. If you put a seed on a piece of stone, it's not going to grow very well. If you put that same seed in the sand of a desert, it's not going to grow very well either. But if you put that same seed on very soft, fertile soil, then its roots grow deep, and its trunk grows strong, and its branches reach out. And very soon, sweet, fragrant flowers and succulent fruits. The fruits of prema, divine love. So it's very important when we approach holy people, when we approach the scriptures, when we approach a holy place, when we approach the Lord within the temple, that our hearts are in a fertile, soft state. That means we're humble. That means we're prayerful. And that means we're eager to serve. Seva. Seva means to show our gratitude by serving without selfishness. Samsidhyaraditoshanam. For the pleasure of the Lord. So I had some ideas of all these things, and I really wanted to prepare myself. So I was sitting on that riverbank, and I was trying to make myself in a state of consciousness so when I go into the Sangam, I could absorb the blessings, the mercy, and the grace that's there. This was 1971. It's 48 years ago. I looked up in the clear blue sky and saw a hawk, large bird soaring through the sky, with wings extended. The sun was seemed to be glowing upon the wings of feathers of a reddish brown color and some white. The hawk was hovering lower, lower, started going in circles lower until he was just a few yards above my head. And I started to think, there's only two people around here, the hawk and me. And he was coming lower and lower, and I saw his yellow eyes were gazing down very intently. And I saw his claws. They were stretching and bending like he was ready to attack. I could see, and he had a long pointed beak. Suddenly, just like that, the hawk dove right into the Ganga and the Yamuna and the Saraswati coming from below. And I was thinking, you know, I thought sadhus are bathing here. The hawk is going underwater here. And underwater there was all kinds of splashing and something was happening down there. He disappeared. And seconds later, the hawk emerged with a fish locked into its sharp, pointed claws. And it was just a few feet in front of me. The fish was about a foot long. And that fish was struggling and squirming and flapping desperately. I could even see the fish's eyes. He looked completely bewildered as the hawk, he rose higher and higher and higher into the sky and then flew into a forest some distance away. I was contemplating, what am I supposed to learn from this situation? What is God teaching me? Life is like a university. The universe, I guess that's where university comes from, the word universe, which means the universe is a place for us to learn. It's a place for us to spiritually grow. Every situation that comes, how are we supposed to direct our lives to spiritually grow and come closer to God in good times, in hard times, in pleasures and crises, because they all come to everyone inevitably. Whoever we are, whatever we have, wherever we live, Matras parishas tukonteya sitos na sukha dukada agamapayano nityas tams tatikshas vabharata. Then there will be the non-permanent appearances of pleasure and pain, honor and dishonor, happiness and distress, success and failure, victory and defeat, health and disease. It's the nature of the world. But dharma, spiritual path, is meant to learn the art of growing, of getting deeper realizations, of making a deeper connection with our own true self and with God through whatever situation comes. So what am I supposed to learn from this simple situation? We see it in many ways all the time.
the hawk of fate. That little fish was probably spending its day like any other day, swimming upstream, swimming downstream, swimming across streams, swimming in circles. May have been with its family members. May have been scouting, looking for food. Just like any other day. There wasn't any expectation that suddenly this hawk would rip that fish out of its whole world and cause it suffering and death. Take it away from everything that it identified with. And isn't that fish very much like you and me? We just go through our life, sometimes in a very complacent way. We read in the news that things happen to people. We've seen it with our own eyes. But we should not be complacent. We should know the nature of this world under the control of time. Is everything passes. But then I was thinking, if this fish was swimming deeper, the hawk could not touch it. It's only because the fish was swimming in shallow waters. And similarly, when our life is focused on shallow, superficial things, ever-changing things, from a spiritual perspective, petty things, then we're so vulnerable. To disturbance, anxiety, loneliness, and inevitable crises. And even if things are going very well, still there's an emptiness there. That's the tendency in this Kali Yuga. Is people, even in the name of religion and God, what to speak of family, society, and entertainment. People are so much obsessed with superficial things that really don't mean much of anything. We cry for them. We die for them. We fight for them. Most of the things that people fight about and become disturbed about really have no significance. But they seem to be so significant. Because we're not focused on something deeper. If our existence is very shallow, then anything that comes around is going to create a disturbance. Apuryamana machala pratishtam. This beautiful verse of Bhagavad Gita, it's toward the end of the second chapter. It describes there's a pond of water. Because there's not much water in that pond, anything that happens to the pond is going to cause a great disruption. If the sun shines too much, it just dries up.
If it rains too much, it gets all flooded and disturbed.
Because it's shallow. But the ocean, because it's so deep. In the summer season, sometimes the rivers practically dry up and they hardly enter like streams into the ocean.
And in the monsoon rainy season, those same rivers are sometimes 1 or 2 kilometers wide, flowing in.
But the river's the same. The river's not either elated or disturbed by the summer or the monsoons. Because of its fullness, because of its depth.
And the Bhagavad Gita is explaining, if we experience within our own selves a depth of happiness, a depth of meaning, a depth of fulfillment,
then we see all the petty changing things of this world for what they are, and we deal with them. We don't ignore them, we don't neglect them, we deal with them with compassion, with detachment. Detachment doesn't mean we have hard hearts. Detachment means we deal with them with love, with compassion, with a stable intellect and mind. If that fish was swimming deeper in that river, Ganga Yamuna Saraswati, the hawk could not touch him. The Bhagavad Gita tells a definition of intelligence is when we seek our happiness within. When we rejoice and find enlightenment within. Because the nature of the soul, the nature of our relationship with the Supreme Soul is true joy. And then this world becomes a wonderful opportunity to share that joy. I almost forgot. The topic of tonight's talk is how life was so much simpler when apples and blackberries were only fruit. So I will give credibility to my speech now. So if we find that inner peace, then science, technology, skills, health, education, they all have tremendous value. Because the value of something is not in the thing. The value is in the purpose in which it is perceived and utilized. And that is a cultured person. One who uses things to love people. But unfortunately, in today's world, so often we fall into this trap, and it seems so normal, that we use people to get and keep things. That is an empty, shallow, pathetic life. And our children should know that that is an empty, shallow, pathetic life. Otherwise, they'll be sucked into the whirlpool of this meaningless existence. Where the meaning of anything could be changed at any moment. Sometimes little things we think back and we understand how valuable they really were. I tell this story often, and I'm going to share it again. When I was a little boy, my mother, it was her birthday, and I forgot that it was her birthday. And the nature of now I'm a Swami, I kind of deal with so many people, so you naturally, every day there's psychology lessons. So many times ladies come to me and tell me, my husband doesn't care about me. So I asked the husband, is there something wrong? I said, no, nothing's wrong. I care about her. But she doesn't think you appreciate her. He says, I do appreciate her. I said, well, have you ever told her that? Have you ever indicated that in any way? He said, no, why should I? She should know. This is a serious matter. We think, we take it for granted, she will know. But the reality is, unless you say it or do something to express it, they don't know. That's human relationships. And sometimes just that lack of communication gradually creates very, very deep insecurities in people's relationships. So I began to learn this on this day. I was thinking, oh no, I came back from school, it was already night, I forgot to get my mother a birthday gift, and she's gonna feel so bad, like I don't love her. I was about 8 years old. So you know what I did? I ran in our backyard, because we just had a small house with a very small backyard. And she had a little garden where she grew roses. There was only 3 rose bushes growing. And there was 1 rose. And I stole it. I just ripped that rose right off. And I went into my mother's kitchen, and I said, Mother, happy birthday! And I gave her the rose that I stole from her. Now, I was a little afraid what she was going to do. She cried in happiness. She had such a big smile on her face. There were tears in her eyes. She embraced me. She said, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then she said, it's not the thing that gives something value. It's the love in which it is given. That is the value of anything. And at that time, I was a little boy. I was just thinking, oh, I got out of that one. I didn't think about what she was really trying to teach me. I was just thinking that, you know, I got away with it. But instances of compassion, instances that are meaningful, have a permanent effect within our heart. And even later on, when those, like little seeds, they start sprouting, and we understand that was a life-changing lesson that changed me as a person. My mother told me that day, if you would have given me a necklace of diamonds or pearls, it could not be more valuable than this rose, which she knew I stole from her bush. Because you've given this to please me. Diamonds can have no more value. The only thing that touches the heart is love. Things could give some pleasure to the mind and the senses, but not the heart, only love. To love and to be loved can touch the heart. And why is that? Because the nature of the soul is to love God. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Satya Kabunoi Sravanari Sudhi Chiti Kodi Ayudhoi. Lord Chaitanya, he gave this simple teaching that Krishna Prem, love for Krishna, love for God, is dormant within the heart of every living being. It is our greatest potential. Because it's when we feel the infinite love of God and reciprocate with our love, it extends, like when you put water on the root of a tree, it extends to every leaf, every flower, every branch, every piece of bark on that tree is nourished. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmanika vihastini sunichaiva svapakeja pandita samadarshanaha. True wisdom, the Bhagavad Gita teaches, is not how much data that we superimpose upon our brain. True wisdom is to see every living being with equal vision. Wherever there's life, it is sacred, because wherever there's life, aham bija pratapita, it is a child of our mother and father, the Supreme. Sarva lokameheshwaram, and all the resources of material nature are all daivyeshu gunamai. It's all God's energy. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachanam. Hetu nanena konteya jagad vipuri varatate. Everything in this whole material existence is emanating from God and is under the control of God. It's the property of God. If we love God, we will honor and respect all that property. We won't try to exploit it. We will honor it with love. So if cell phones could be a great distraction. I don't want to expose our brahmacharis, but I'm going to do it because it's a good lesson. Today I was at Kranti Yoga, which is a very wonderful yoga ashram somewhere in Goa. And there were so many wonderful young people there, and old people, and middle people. And I was speaking, and everyone was so gracious and so receptive. And one of my dear brothers, Guru Prasad Swami, happened to be there. And after the talk, he's a Swami, wonderful, saintly man. And after the talk, some of the students came to him and said, "You know, we really enjoyed the talk and we were listening and learning, but why all the people who are dressed like you in saffron, why all of them throughout the whole talk were doing text messages and doing things on their cell phones?" Haribol. I don't know what he said. Maybe he said, "Because they're sadhus, what do you expect?" But they were thinking, how are we supposed to take this seriously if your own people aren't taking it seriously? So you see, whatever walk, whatever dress we wear, we can be distracted. Of course, I'm sure those people were doing seva, 100% they were doing seva. But still, even while trying to do seva, cell phones could be really a distraction. I once talked to somebody, and they told me they went on the internet to see what the weather was that day. And 8 hours later, they realized how distracted they were. That energy's there. But at the same time, you know, that same energy, when we have a focused mind, when we're not distracted by superficialities because of the shallow nature of our own consciousness, when we have depth, then we could use everything with depth. We don't just waste money, we don't pollute the earth, we don't unnecessarily, we don't just waste the valuable, precious moments of our life with internet stuff. We use it to learn subjects that are enriching and valuable, and to help to spread knowledge and goodness and compassion to others. Morphine is a drug. I have seen young people's, their lives are completely destroyed because drug dealers are trying to convince them that this will make you happy. And they get in the association of other people who make them feel it's cool to do this, it's courageous to do this. And eventually they just hit the bottom of life and suffering. So a narcotics dealer is exploiting young people with something like morphine. But our Bhaktivedanta hospital, we have a hospice in Mumbai and we have a hospice in Vrindavan. And they use that same morphine with compassion, with love, to help people to go through their last stages of life in a way that they have a stable, peaceful mind to remember God and to reciprocate with the love of their families. A knife in the hands of a thief will kill somebody for their own selfish greed. But that same knife in the hands of a surgeon will save a person's life. So everything in this world, what is its value? Its value isn't in its quantitative calibration. The value is in the character of how we use it. Our relationships could have infinite, beautiful, eternal value. If we find that place within our hearts to share God's love, to be an instrument of love, to be an instrument of compassion, and to receive that love and compassion. So whether it's an Apple or an Apple computer, whether it's a BlackBerry, do they still use BlackBerry phones? I'm not up to date on these things, but everything's always changing. Nothing lasts very long. When I was young, I was from Chicago. The largest retail store in the entire planet was Sears. And it seemed infallible. And now, Sears is seared. It's going through total bankruptcy. Nothing lasts. The British Empire. There was that famous saying, the sun never sets in the British Empire. I go to London, it's so foggy. It seems like the sun never rises in the British Empire. Just one little island now. The Roman Empire, it extended to most of Europe. It's finished. Now it's just a little city. So nothing lasts in this world. Everything's changing. You can't hold on to anything. But najayate mriyate vakachati. The soul is eternal. God is eternal. Our relationships with other souls on that inner platform, when we connect to our own hearts, our own consciousness, then we could have deep, eternal, spiritual relationships with everyone we meet. That's life. That's truth. That's the joy we're all seeking. And it's within us. It's everyone's complete right to have direct experience of that. But we're distracted. We're distracted because we start because we don't give time and energy to cultivate that inner awareness. Satsang, sadhana, sadachar, seva. This is a simple principle that I really found to be the essence of all scriptures and all the teachings of the sadhus. That satsang is so important. People really go to the Kumbh Mela not just to bathe in the rivers, that's part of it, but it's the satsang of the people who are there. When we associate regularly with people who are like-minded, seeking enlightenment, seeking higher truths, sharing the glories of the Lord, Sravaram, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, that focuses us. Sometimes you're driving, and today they have GPS. Yes? What else do they call GPS? Anyways, you're driving, and there's this little screen on your car, and usually this voice says, turn right in 500 feet. So you're driving. And then turn right in 200 feet. You're driving. Turn right 50 feet. You have every, yes, yes, I'm going to do it. And then suddenly you start thinking, God, why did this person say this about me this morning, and what is going to happen now? And your mind kind of just goes off into a tangent, and you become distracted, and you see a hoarding or a billboard with some poster about something, and you think, what's that about? And then you hear, your destination is being recalibrated. Recalculated. Because you passed it. You got distracted. So we get distracted. But what are we going to do about it? Just because you're distracted, it doesn't mean it's... We make mistakes. We have to recalculate, recalibrate, and go back to where we want to be. That's what life is about. And that's why satsang is so important. We hear about what is really valuable in life. What is really my purpose of life? What is it that I want these precious, limited moments of my human existence, what do I want to use it for? There's a famous conversation between Albert Einstein and a fellow scientist, Mr. Weisenberg. And Albert Einstein said, in the West, our science and technology has created a beautiful ship with luxurious comforts. But there's no compass to give direction. What's the purpose of a ship? It's to take you somewhere. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Where do we want to go? What do we want to leave as a legacy for our children and our grandchildren? Those are the important subjects. So satsang is when we come together on a regular basis with like-minded people and enlightened people and sadhus. And a sadhu doesn't mean a person in saffron on a cell phone. Doesn't mean a person with long matted hair smoking a chillum. A sadhu means, it could be the CEO of an international corporation can be a sadhu. If he's seeing everything as God's property and he's centered in his own as an instrument of God's compassion. That satsang is so important. And then sadhana. To put some special quality time aside every day to reconnect with our own inner being, to reconnect with God through meditation, through prayer, through chanting, through puja, not just as a ritual, but as a way of purifying our minds, purifying our hearts, and reconnecting to what's really meaningful, God's grace. And through satsang and sadhana, we become clear in our consciousness, and then we can go out into the world and do wonderful things with whatever resources are available. After all, Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna in the morning, and then for the next 18 days, he didn't just sit in an ashram. He performed his duty. So similarly, we need to hear the Gita. We need to hear from the holy books, whatever. That seems to be the alarm for overtime. Either it was an intentional or it was a divine reminder. I'll stop, but I was talking about how we have to interpret things. So, Bhagavad Gita, and Arjuna was charged with direction, with spiritual power, and with grace, and then he went out into the world and performed his duties. But nasta prayasya padrasu nityam bhagavati sevaya. We need regular connection. Today, people get really, in the West we say uptight, but people get really concerned about being connected. Yes, somebody comes to your house and the first thing is, do you have a Wi-Fi connection? Or you have to connect to recharge your cell phone or internet connection. People are very concerned about these connections. And very worried they might lose that connection. Well, sadhana is about, we should be at least 100,000 times more concerned about our inner connection, our connection with God, our connection with our own souls, our connection with the character that makes our life meaningful and beautiful and wonderful. But we need to get recharged. And that's what our sadhana is. Every day we put some time aside to reconnect, to give everything else we do in our life a spiritual, fulfilling meaning. So that we could really do something for the world from our hearts, not just superficially. If you give money in charity, that's all right. But if you really care and you really want to make a difference in people's lives and you give, even if it's just a little, that's going to make a major impact in the world, in the universe. If we have one paisa to give and we give that paisa, or if we have a 10,000 crores, the quantity isn't important. It's the intention, it's the purpose, it's the love that makes things wonderful. Satsang, sadhana, sadachar. To live with character. To represent the greatness of Bharatvarsha. The culture. Whatever our religion may be. In the Christian religion, to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and to love your neighbor as yourself. That's the essence. Savai pungsam paro dharamo yato bhakti rirhokshajaya hoitikiya pradiha tayayatma suprasediti. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells the same thing. The supreme dharma, paradharma, is to love God. Ahoitikiya pratihata. Without selfish or egoistic motivations. And that love is expressed through seva that's not interrupted by ever-changing circumstances. And that seva is how we share with humanity and with all living beings. That's the purpose of life. That's the joy that we're all looking for in life. Jagruti, did I pronounce that correctly? Radha Gopinath Prabhu. So honored that you are here. And I also want to give a special gratitude to my very dear friend Mohan Ji, who's a Brijabasi from Gokul in Vrindavan and Yatipur. And he's come to bless us all. Jai Shri Radhe. And my very dear friend Dr. Roni, who's just a wonderful spiritual seeker and a very old friend. And to all of you, kirtan is the simplest and yet most powerful form of sadhana. And it incorporates satsang because we're together. We're together to share one purpose. There's no person who's big or small in a kirtan. Everyone, it's like flowers on a mala, on a garland. All the flowers together make the garland beautiful. We're an offering together as a society, as a sangham, to enlighten each other, enrich each other, and to help us all connect to that grace of Krishna, that grace of the Supreme. Kalayar dosa nide raja nasti heku mahanguna kirtanad eva Krishna sya mukta sangha parambrajet. The Bhagavad Puran tells, in this age of Kali, it is an ocean of faults. People fight over such things that are useless. World wars are fought over such useless misconceptions. This land is mine, this land is yours. We fight about the resources. Ultimately, sarvalokameshwam, everything that belongs to God, if we accept that and we accept each other as brothers, then we get along. But still, people like Arjuna, they need to be there to protect from predators and from people who are trying to exploit and conquer for their own reasons. But the reality is, in Kali Yuga, people fight over such stupid things. But in this Kali Yuga, where we're so easily disturbed, so easily distracted, there is one blessing that anyone, everyone, from whatever our background may be, if we sincerely, from our heart, chant the names of Lord Hari, of Krishna, of God who has many names, then we can attain the supreme perfection of liberation. And then in whatever we do, we are instruments of grace, of love. Thank you very much. May we have kirtan?
Yes, yes, yes.
Can I teach you a special way to dance?
Haribo!
My beloved Guru, Srila Prabhupada, his compassion is like the lighthouse that gives direction to my life. When he was 70 years old, he left Vrindavan with not any money, 40 rupees actually. He got a free passage on a cargo ship from Calcutta to New York, 38 days at sea. He had heart attack, seasickness on the way. It's not like these boats out here. This is a cargo ship, and it was a really old cargo ship. And when he arrived, he was living in the ghetto of the Bowery. He didn't know anyone, no resources, no one to help him. But he wanted to give Krishna's love to people. He didn't judge anyone. He saw the potential of divine joy in everyone. And he brought that out. That's what holy people do. They see your spiritual potential and convince you to believe it's there. And teach us how to actually connect with that. And how did he do? By teaching this beautiful process of kirtan. And he taught us a very simple dance step. And I'd like to ask Shubha Vilas Prabhu to come on stage and teach us. He's a very qualified advocate. He's a lawyer by profession, a scholar, an author of books. An incredible organizer, and I must tell you that the only reason I'm here this evening is because Shubha Vilas Prabhu, by the ropes of his affection, he dragged me here. His heart is so full of compassion, so full of wisdom, and he's just giving everything just to inspire other people, to uplift other people. So when someone like this asks you to come, you know, I was on my way to Kumbh Mela, and he said, well, on your way, come to Goa. From Mumbai, It's a detour. It's the opposite direction. And not only opposite direction, it's kind of the opposite place. Usually when you tell people you're going to Goa, they don't think you're going on pilgrimage. But because Shubha Vilasji is, I respect him so much because of his life of seva, I'm here. So now he's going to teach us how to dance. According to what Prabhupada called the Swami step. As I'm singing, please put your hands together like this. Pranams. We're welcoming. Swagatam. Namaskar. We're welcoming the all beautiful, all loving, all graceful Supreme Being, Sri Radharani and Krishna, into our hearts. And as you respond by chanting yourselves, please raise your arms like this. We call this the Sharanagati Asana. My Lord, I'm yours. You have descended. Kali Kale Namurupe Krishna Vata, the Supreme Being in the age of Kali, incarnates within the holy names. My Lord, I'm yours. That is the mood. That is the meditation of raising our arms like this. And now Shubha Vilas Prabhu is going to teach us how Prabhupada taught us to move our feet. Left foot in front of right, right foot in front of left. So nice. Everyone, please.
Let us dance with Shubha Vilas Prabhu.
RG Media YouTube channel. Like, share, subscribe.